Are you in a can-do job? You know, the kind of job that you can do, but down deep, you really don't like it. In fact, you maybe even despise it. But, you know, it pays and keeps things going. Well, let me ask you, is that what you want for your child? Or would you like them to discover what God made them to do and find a job that fulfills it? If so, stay with me.
Welcome to this Friday edition of Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram. Chip is our Bible teacher on this International Discipleship Program. I'm Dave Drewy, and today Chip wraps up his series, A Priceless Christmas. Now, over the past couple of weeks, he's given us five priceless gift ideas that'll bless you and your family way beyond December 25th. Now, if you missed any of these programs, this entire series is available on the Chip Ingram app. Now, today's message is loaded with a lot of detail, so just before we get started, let me encourage you to try using Chip's message notes while you listen. They're a quick download when you go to livingontheedge.org. Just click Listen Now. Well, let's join Chip now for part two of his message, Teach Them to Work Unto the Lord.
These are just real practical ways to help your kids learn to put Colossians 3:23 into practice. By the way, there's certain verses like every child needs to memorize, obviously basic ones on salvation and basic ones on prayer. But you need to have them memorize one on suffering, one on decisions, and one on work. And this would be a good one. But here's four specific things. When they're young, give them jobs growing up. I mean, 2 years old, let them help set the table. 3 and 4 years old, let them help you make the beds. 5 and 6 year olds, they make the bed on their own. 7 and 8 year olds, they get to help in the kitchen. 9 year olds get to take out the garbage. I mean, give them jobs, give them jobs, give them jobs. More and more and more and more. And by the way, this is what's amazing. When they get older, they don't want to work at all. When they're little, what do they always want to do? Can I help you? Can I help you? What do we tell them? No. Why? Because it's a hassle. Right? They mess everything up. But they want to be with you. All that study, all that stuff that you've been hearing about self-esteem, you want your kids to have great self-esteem? Self-esteem doesn't come by sitting on the bench of some little game and getting a trophy at the end saying you're a winner. Self-esteem comes by confidence of you learning to accomplish certain things and overcoming challenges. The way you learn that is by responsibility. The way you get responsibility is you get jobs. Little kids just say, how did I do it? Well, the forks go here and here. Okay, now you try it. Great job. Good effort. And then later on, what, they get older, right? By 10 or 11, they don't want to take out the trash. They don't want to help with anything. Well, then you're going to teach him discipline through work. I remember my one son, he had the gift of forgetfulness. Seriously, he was sincere as he could be. And his job, I mean, like everyone had their jobs. And like his job was the trash every day. And every day he'd forget. And so, you know, I fell into the bad parenting patterns that you all know don't work, but I did it too. Nag, 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 get upset, get intense after you're upset. Never works. And so finally, after trying everything, I said to my youngest son, I said, son, you're having trouble remembering to take out the trash. It's the only job you have when you get home, correct? Yes. Okay, I'm going to help you. Oh, thanks, Dad. Here's what we're going to do. I'm home at 5:30, and at 5:30, when I walk in the door, if the trash is done, you get to eat supper. If the trash isn't done, you get to skip supper, because I want to help you learn the self-discipline of learning to take out the trash. I mean, this is like we've done this 19 times. And sincere, Dad, I'm sorry, I forgot. Substitute, homework, calling, get it, parents? Does anybody have a job where if you don't follow up, don't follow through, don't call in, don't care things, that they don't keep paying you and ask you to go take some other job? All of us, right? Where do you think your kids are going to learn that? And so, of course, I knew what was going to happen. I don't know if it was planned. It couldn't have been because Teresa's too merciful. But so we had pizza. And that was a real treat in those days. We could rarely afford, you know, anything special. And so we're all sitting down, and Ryan, and so I said, oh, Ryan, is the trash? Oh, I forgot, Dad. I said, oh, I am so sorry. See, I'm not down, I'm not nagging, I'm not upset. I am so sorry. Ryan, you can be excused. Well, what do you mean? Well, remember what we said? We're not going to eat tonight.
Dad, it's pizza.
I said, I'll bet you remember the trash tomorrow. He'll go, Dad, I promise. No, you don't have to promise anything. It's okay. Tomorrow? And then, of course, Teresa, you know, we're clearing the dishes. Should I give him a piece? No. Well, shouldn't he get something? No, he will not starve to death. He'll learn. He forgot twice. And it's amazing. This self-motivating grace kicked in when we provided some loving consequences. So number one, give them jobs. Number two, feed them responsibility. Feed them responsibility. I see parents that are totally worn out, putting all the things here, doing all. You got kids at 12, 13, 14. Why should you be doing all the laundry? Why shouldn't they do their own? Why are parents shaking kids? You have to get up. You have to get up. They're 14. They're 15 years old. Buy them an alarm. If they miss, they miss. If they miss the test, they miss the test. If they get a low grade, they get a low grade. You are way more committed to their success than they are. And what they feel is pressure from you. What you want is kids that can get up, that are self-disciplined, that work well, that handle responsibility, not necessarily have high SAT scores. But they'll get great scores if you teach them. But here's what we do. We take care of everything for them. I've seen parents completely harried while the kids are playing video games. Hey, dinner almost ready? And I'm thinking, what's wrong with this picture? Third is require excellent work and help them develop a work ethic. Yes, this sounds crazy, but you know when you have them vacuum, because they help vacuum, right? They clean out the garage, they clean their room, and you do the deal where you kind of lift up the rug and you realize, hey, you didn't do under the rug? And they say, well, no one looks here. He says, are you doing this for people or for God? He sees everything. Oh, Chip, you're pushing it too far. Well, maybe. I would say when I look at my children, probably one of the greatest links to all their success in every job is, you know what they learned at home? They learned how to work and work unto the Lord. And they learned. Some of them had to learn it doesn't have to be so perfect, so you had to help them. And others had to learn, that's not close, do it again. Number four, help them to work for an audience of one. It's about attitude. And often they're not going to have a good attitude early on. Help them begin to say, my kids heard this verse until it was coming out of their ears. Oh yeah, I know, Dad, it's an audience of one, work unto the Lord. That's right. Because someday you're going to be an engineer unto the Lord, or a musician unto the Lord, or a mom unto the Lord, or a construction worker unto the Lord, or own your own company unto the Lord. And you know what? If you learn early on that this is His and you do it unto Him, there's a level of excellence and a level of integrity that your actual work will be a testimony for God. Because I will tell you, most people do their work and what they're trying to figure out is how fast can I get it done, how little can I do, and how much can I get paid for doing as little as possible. And when you don't work like that, you stand out. When Christians work like that, what a testimony. So the priceless gift you want to give them is learning what you were made to do. That's the gift you want to give your kids. Learning what you were made to do. What I want you, as you listen, I want you to think, I've got some plans to make for the new year. One of my plans, one of my priorities needs to be, how am I going to teach my children to work unto the Lord? And the only way to do that is you need to figure out what their design is. You need to understand, how did God make them? They're wired. They're intricately made. They're wonderfully made. They're wonderful. They may not be like you at all, but I will tell you, they're exactly the way God wants them. They have certain spiritual gifts. They have certain passions. They have certain aptitudes. They have certain personalities. They've already had some experiences that some have been great, some have been not so great. And so what you want to do is you want to figure out what's the shape of my child so that you can put your arm around them and coach them toward the thing that he's made them to do. Does that make sense? So I'm going to give you some ways to do that and some resources. Helping them discover God's calling for their life involves this shape. The S is for spiritual gifts. What are theirs? Do your kids know what their spiritual gifts are? My youngest son didn't like to work. That's Ryan. But I will tell you what, he had this uncanny spiritual gift from the time he was 9 or 10 years old. I still remember there was a window outside of our garage. We turned a garage into a bedroom, and outside was a window, and I was doing a little work in my boy's bedroom, and I could hear through the window. And Ryan is like 8 or 9 years old. And this is a neighbor kid that's like 8 years old. And Ryan is articulating the gospel as clearly as Billy Graham has ever said it. 9 years old. And then he turns to this little 8-year-old and says, "Are you ready to receive Christ?" And the little kid bows his head, and I'm thinking, man, are you kidding me? Now, he didn't like math. He didn't like science. But I saw he had a spiritual gift. By the time he was 10 years old, "Ryan, you got to get ready for school. I'm not done with my quiet time yet. I'm reading the Bible. It's too interesting." Now, I didn't have that problem with all my kids. But he had this, and then I remember when he was a senior in high school, he'd led 4 of the 6 guys on the volleyball team to Christ, and then he invited him over. And they'd have a Bible study, and the house was pretty small, so there was nowhere to go, so Teresa and I would go back in our bedroom, and I can still remember, I put up the pillows and, you know, paper-thin doors, and we'd lean like this, and we'd listen to Ryan teach. And I'd be thinking, where's he getting this stuff? I mean, I didn't know that. But what I understood was he hated school. It helped me later on understand why he needed to work for a year so he could learn some discipline, but he needed to go to a school. I mean, he read C.S. Lewis. I gave him theology volumes, and he would read them and write reports for me. But he didn't do his homework. He was completely unmotivated in school. But you start cooperating. Did I keep working with the school stuff? Yes. That's why I had to work for a year. I made him pay for his first semester. You're thinking, this guy is so heartless. Well, I had 6 years in a row of him not being faithful to do what he said he was going to do in school. It's not, again, remember, manage your money well. It's not my money. I told it, Ryan, I said, your first semester is going to be about 10 grand. What I know is you've never put 2 6-weeks together for the last 6 years. So if it's God's money and I put 10 grand down and then you blow it in college, you're disappointed, I'm sad, $10,000 of God's money is gone. So you can work for a year, save $8,000 or $10,000, you pay for the first semester. If you do okay the first semester, then I'll chip in and we'll go with college stuff. And that's what he did. I mean, the guy began acing Greek. But he only had to take like 3 or 4, he went to a Bible school, he only had to take like 3 classes where there was English, math, and something. And he, of course, classic, he procrastinated until his senior year. He didn't take any of those classes, but he needed him to graduate. So here's this kid that, quote, can't study, undisciplined. He goes in, gets 3 books, figures out what's in them, studies for 3 weeks, and cleps out of all 3 classes. See, your kids are designed and motivated certain ways. You want to cooperate with that. Help them discover their spiritual gift. His obviously was in the area of teaching and in the Bible. Second is heart. Where's your passion, your desire? What do they dream about? What's your kids' passions? And by the way, don't spiritualize everything. I had one son early on. It was music, music, music. Made me crazy. There was a band in our living room, then there was a band in the garage, then there was a band in a van, then a band moving on, you know? And I was committed not to go in debt, and we had very little money, but I saw this passion and this gift growing and growing and growing, and I'll never forget, I went to our worship pastor at the time. His name was Dana, very good friend. I said, Dana, we got this old, clunky, bad, bad piano that they stick, and my son, I think there might be some gift here, and I want to cooperate with it. And he convinced me, he said, pianos increase in value. It's a lot like your house if you get a decent one. So I still remember it was like $5,000 Yamaha piano. And I remember when my son came home, And he wrote his first song on that. And now people are singing that kid's songs all around the world, all around the world. And for Christmas, after 25 years, we shipped that piano, and he has it in his studio, where he and the likes of Chris Tomlin and Matt Redman and Reuben Morgan and all these guys that write all these worship songs, they hang out together. Why? Because you discover where their passions are, and then you cooperate with it. And that's our job. We're coaches. We're helpers. But it's not so they land this job and go to this school and get these grades so that it reflects like we're good people. Our job is to help them figure out what God made them to do, not what will make us look good. And by the way, that's really subtle. I'm not down on anybody. I felt those same pressures. Third is their aptitude. What are they good at? What are they good at? Remember early on, if you haven't seen the little book, Strength Finders, if your kids probably are 12, 13 and up, I remember when Annie went through that and wow, you could see what her strength finder, this is what she's good at. And then you begin to gear. Let's let them major and do things what they're good at and how they're made. Same as with personality. How are they wired? How do they relate to people? I mean, you can take the DISC test or the MMPI. There's so many resources, and many of them are online and they're free, but do you ever think about this as a parent? I mean, some of you are employers and you're in business, and you do all these tests to figure out, will this employee fit in this job? What about your son or your daughter? Why don't you give them some tests? Why don't you meet with them? Why don't you observe them? Why don't you start keeping a little journal with each one of your kids and saying, this is what they're good at. Here's their aptitudes. Here's what I think their spiritual gifts. You want to create a grid where you're like this coach. You're this student of your son or your daughter, and you're watching this masterpiece develop. And what you want to do is learn more and more and more and more, and then align that masterpiece so they do what God made them to do. E is for experience. What have they done well and they enjoyed? What have they done well and they enjoyed? Ask them. Go out for a cup of coffee or Coke and just ask them, what have you done that you think you've really done well that you've really enjoyed? And so then you get their shape. You begin to see their spiritual gifts, their heart, their aptitude, their personality, their experience. And then there'll be some times where they'll have some big decisions. And they're just like us. They're just people, so they're pulled. And they're pulled this direction or that direction. So as a wise counselor, what you want to do is you say, well, this is your shape. You remind. We always need someone in our life that pulls us back to this is who you are. Because all of us are tempted to take the job where there's fame or ego or money or applause. And by the way, if a job brings that, fine. But a lot of people are doing jobs for the wrong reason. And then if you're not made for it, you don't like it. I remember Annie, shortly after college, had an opportunity to work for two different organizations. One was a startup where she would get to shape things, lead things, and kind of have a lot of responsibility to make it happen. The other was an organization that was huge and very well known and would have been a real feather in your cap to get to work for that organization, a very, very high-class organization. And she wrestled with that. And, you know, those are times, too, where as a parent you step back and say, you know, pray about it, I'm glad. But what I remember was thinking, this is her personality, these are her strengths, she's going to be about seven person down on the pecking order in that organization, and in the smaller startup, she's going to get to shape it. And it was everything I could do to not tell her what she ought to do. Ooh, that's so hard. But I kind of stepped back and just tried to remind her, okay, how are you wired? I mean, this is part of the Ingram tradition, and it's not all good, but when they step in a room, they want to say, this is the way it goes. And that's good and bad. But what you don't want to be, you want to have this leadership gift inside of you and feel like you just never have a chance to exercise it. So for you and for especially for your kids, figure out the design and then get aligned with it. She ended up taking the job with the smaller organization, moved up quickly, shaped things. It was really exciting to see. Why? Because she was made to do that. Second, encourage them to get honest, wise counsel about who they are and where they fit to move forward. Who are they? Wise counsel. You know, you want the children's pastor, the youth pastor, the parent they look up to, something in their areas of interest. You want them to get wise counsel, and a multitude of counsel, there is safety. Where they ask questions and can ask someone, you know, what should I do? I remember my son Eric really didn't know what to do with his life. And he took one class. He took one class in biology, and they studied the skeleton and the human body. And he came and he said, Dad, it's unbelievable. Do you realize how God's made the body? And I said, well, not really, but it's pretty cool. And I remember there was a Diana Roberts was a physical therapist. And she offered to let Eric volunteer. And he began to volunteer and see how the human body worked. That was pivotal to him becoming a physical therapist. He loves it. He's been exploring and seeing how he can repair rotator cuffs and ACLs and people that have had hip replacements and see them where they couldn't walk, where they get to walk, and he gets to be hands of healing. Third, help them be willing to move out of their comfort zone to fulfill their divine purpose. And I would add, and yours. Sometimes you have to say, you really do need to take the AP courses because you've got what it takes, and I know it's harder. Sometimes you need to say, you know something? I know you kind of like it here, and all your friends are here, all your friends are going to that school, but you know something? That's really not what's best for you. You're not designed for that. You're just caving into peer pressure. And sometimes God will take you out of your comfort zone. My one son came to me in the middle of college, said to me, you know what, I'm called to do music. I hate school. I'm getting nothing out of it. God's called me to be a musician. That's what I'm going to do. Well, both parents were school teachers. I was a school teacher. Education is like sacred. And I remember saying, well, son, you know, here was, the honest dad was, probably won't make it in music. Few people do, need to have a good backstop, so get a real job, and then if the music thing works out, fine. So I was sort of couching that, and I still remember we were in the kitchen, and I can tell you right where he's standing in the kitchen, picture behind him, and I'm over here in front of like the refrigerator. Hey, Dad, who's the person who said follow your dreams, step out, make a difference, dream big dreams? I don't know. I don't remember that person, you know? And I mean, he literally quoted like one of my sermons. He goes, Dad, you know what? I can go back to college. I'm motivated, but this is what I want to do with my life. And I remember saying, you know, you're a grown man. If that's what you're called to do. And we did. Now, he drove a muffin truck trying to figure out how to make things work for about 6 months and kept music. And he eventually kind of went back and he decided that he would finish out that little bit of college. And then, you know, he did crazy stuff. He just moved to Nashville, and everyone said, you know, there's busboys that are better musicians than you. He goes, I know that, but this is what God called me to do. And, I mean, he drove a UPS truck, and he sold T-shirts out of the back of things, and he just and had this little gal that would do whatever. I'm more impressed with Cully than I think I am Jason to follow him. But there is a point in time where we need to stop asking what's the most secure place for our kids and what's the most financially best decision they can make and start asking, life is short, what did God make them to do? And am I going to cooperate helping them discover what God made them to do? The world screams, you are what you do. And God says, no, the truth is, do what you are. The message, the life message, is you were created to work. Is that great? It's good. You're created to work. Help them discover their Ephesians 2:10 calling.
Chip will be right back. But if you're just joining us, you're listening to Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram. And Chip's message today, Teach Them to Work Unto the Lord, is from his series, A Priceless Christmas. In this series, Chip unpacks five key life skills that tend to make or break us. And he gives us biblical insight and practical steps for passing on these key skills to our kids, our grandkids, or maybe someone we're mentoring. In these five messages, you'll learn what God's Word says about handling money, making wise choices, suffering well, working unto the Lord, and that failure is never final. As a parent or grandparent, you want to give your child every advantage in life. This series, A Priceless Christmas, gives you the tools you need to help your child develop godly character in all of these areas. So why not order a set of CDs or download the free MP3s as a gift to yourself and your family for an amazing new year of growth in the Lord. For discount details, just visit us online at livingontheedge.org or give us a call at 1-888-333-6003. A Priceless Christmas. Get it today. Well, Chip, I know you've got a great application for today, but before we get to that, what would you say to a parent or grandparent who really wants to do a good job but is struggling for a clear thought about what to do next?
Great question, Dave. You know, I know there's a lot of parenting resources out there, but I think embedded in a lot of the Christian thinking, even in good parenting resources, is that we want to make our kids happy and successful. We want them to get great jobs, find the right person, make a lot of money. And underneath it all is that we want them to be happy. And I got news for you. That focus creates entitled children. The five things that we talk about in A Priceless Christmas is giving them what money can't buy. It's learning to suffer well because we know hard things are coming. It's learning to make wise choices because God is holy. It's learning to manage your money unto the Lord so that you recognize that you're a steward instead of an owner. It's recognizing that grace-filled lives, that failure is never final. All of our kids, all of our grandkids, and just like us, they're going to fail, but do they know who God is? Do they know how, like Peter, to be restored and realize God can still use your life when you blow it big time? These are the kind of core truths that I think in the heart of your child, in the heart of your grandchild, will sustain them. Because here's the deal. God longs for them to be godly and holy and pure, and the byproduct, they'll be joyful and happy. But these things are hard to teach. And so in each message, I give you a theology of suffering or work or money or decision making. And then I give you practical ways about how to teach them and then a game plan to do it. And let me remind you that today is the last day to take advantage of this series discounts. So let me encourage you, think about your kids, think about your grandkids, and turn your good intention to action and order it today.
Thanks, Chip. Well, it's tough to absorb this amount of great teaching only one time through. So getting this series on CD or downloading the Chip Ingram app are two ways to hear these messages again and again. And remember, the MP3s are free. So make good on your intentions and take advantage of these resources today. You can order online at livingontheedge.org or give us a call at 1-888-333-6003. Well, now here's Chip with a final thought.
As we wrap up today's program, and actually we wrap up the entire series, there's just a couple of things I want to make sure that you get. I realize there's times where I talk really, really fast, and I give you tons and tons of information, and especially if you're driving in your car or on that treadmill or there's kids in the back seat, you're going, oh my gosh, he said so much and said it so fast, especially about discovering your child's shape. I gave you an acronym for S-H-A-P-E, about really becoming a student of your child and understanding how did God make that little one or not so little one that you love so much. So let me encourage you to go to our website, Living on the Edge, all one word, livingontheedge.org, and download the message notes. They're easy to find, and that acronym and all of that will be there. And then I would suggest you do something, and this would be a great family devotional. I think one of the things, as I observed my kids, I found that the culture kept pushing them that you're a somebody if you do this or if you do that, or the media would say this or say that. And what I wanted to do was impart in them, this is how God gifted you. And if He gifted you and put some passions and desires in you, that is probably going to tell you His purpose for your life more clearly than anything else. One of our most popular series is called Your Divine Design. It has a workbook, you can stream it, you can get DVDs, but it's just a four-part series, but it literally helps a person with the Bible alone to discover, this is how God gifted me. This is my motivational gift, my ministry gifts. And when they discover how God gifts them, they get a big clue about how God wants to use him. Let me encourage you as a parent, be the student of your child and try to discern what he wants to do with their life rather than what they want or what you think would make them happy. And I will tell you this, years down the road, you'll be very grateful.
The message notes Chip just mentioned are a quick download when you go to livingontheedge.org and just click the Broadcasts tab. And his series, Your Divine Design, is available on the website when you click More and Group Studies. Well, just before we close, I want to say thank you to those who make this broadcast possible through your generous financial support. Now, if you found today's program helpful but have never supported us financially, there's never been a better time than right now. When you give a gift to Living on the Edge, it will be matched dollar for dollar, thanks to some very generous friends of the ministry. Making a donation is easy. Just go to livingontheedge.org and click the Donate button on our homepage. Or you can always give us a call at 1-888-333-6003. That's 1-888-333-6003. On behalf of Chip and the whole team, thank you in advance for your generosity. Well, I hope you'll join us again on Monday when Chip begins a new series, Good to Great in God's Eyes. Until then, this is Dave Drewy saying thanks for listening to this edition of Living on the Edge.